Welcome to Life After Journalism, in which we hear from the people who brought us the news and see what they're up to now that they've moved on with their lives. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and as the minute waltz fades away, we ask that the studio audience give today's guest a warm welcome as I introduce Bob Wirth. Bob is a former ABC news correspondent and bureau manager posted in Asia, and he eventually progressed to ABC manager for television and radio in Queensland. He left that career after more than 30 years and is now an author of non-fiction books. He begins by telling us how he got into journalism, and for him, it wasn't the most obvious career path.
This sounds very strange, but I did appallingly badly at school and left early. My only interest was the beach and surf, and I was involved in a rescue as a surfboard rider. So, cut a long story short, I became the surf club's publicity officer, and I wrote for the local newspaper, and I got engulfed in journalism and loved it all my life. And that's how it happened, actually.
Okay, so through the surf club, so a bit of a different thing there.
Absolutely. It was amazing because the local newspaper really just accepted handouts, and I was able to go on to actually edit the newspaper on a part-time basis and write the lead stories, write editorials, and generally construct the whole makeup of the newspaper, which was quite fascinating. It was a weekly throwaway.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get from there to working with the ABC as a foreign correspondent then?
Okay. It was a bit of a long haul. I got a cadetship in Wollongong. I came back to Sydney after only 6 months because I hated Wollongong, and I began working part-time as a journalist in ABC Radio News, and that was really my start, and worked there for some years and eventually became a foreign correspondent and manager for Asia. I was a foreign correspondent for about 5 years and manager Asia at the same time in the latter years of that time, in the 80s. Mm. And then I came back as news editor for Queensland and then radio manager for Queensland, and then finally as the ABC's manager for radio and television for Queensland.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about being a foreign correspondent in your career. I imagine being posted to Papua New Guinea in the 1970s and in the Asia area in around that time in the 80s. It must have been like being an explorer in some ways.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, especially in Papua New Guinea. I wasn't a foreign correspondent there. Papua New Guinea was a branch of the ABC, like a state branch like Queensland or New South Wales.
Yeah.
So I was a junior reporter, but you were posted all over the place. You know, you actually did go on adventures into the darkest parts of PNG on stories, and it was absolutely fascinating. I covered the murder trial of Jack Emanuel, who was the district commissioner at Rabaul. I would meet him. The local Tolai journalists on the station in Rabaul would take me up to Government House. There'd be a garden party, complete with a colonial band playing, and they'd just sort of crash in on the garden party, and the High Commissioner, Jack Emanuel, was a wonderful fellow, and he'd welcome them with open arms. Mm. We'd have a few beers standing overlooking this magnificent Simpson Harbour and the volcanoes all around. It wasn't long afterwards where he was assassinated by 13 Tolais, and I attended the murder trial. So as a young reporter, all of this was just amazing and fascinating, and you know, you'd find yourself at times in canoes going down rivers and doing all sorts of wonderful and weird things. Michael Somare in those days was a young politician still doing university work. Our senior political reporter in PNG broke his leg, and I was suddenly thrust into the role, and I'd go around and see him, Somare, every morning, and he had a flat at the University of Papua New Guinea, and quite often have a different girlfriend there, but he'd tell me what was going on, and that was the basis of my news story. So, yeah, it was an amazing couple of years.
How self-reliant have you learnt to be as a reporter then?
Well, I think that's one of the things that you pick up. Firstly, when you're overseas, you learn to live with another culture, you learn to understand other cultures and to get on with them and respect them. Otherwise, you won't pick up any news stories, basically. So you get a much broader understanding of what life's all about. Sometimes a bit of the language, although when you're moving around, it's difficult to pick up any language in great detail. But overseas service, as with other professions, broadens the outlook considerably.
I guess you're limited as well by the technology that you have and how you get your stories back and just communicate with the home base.
Yeah, that's very true. Most of my time as a foreign correspondent, then as manager in Asia, and you didn't have that ready communication. I know in New Delhi, when things were occurring, you had to go into the radio, had to book a landline. You couldn't just do a radio report over the telephone. Mm. You had to book a landline and then go into this public broadcasting building and just hope and pray that the landline was up, which it frequently wasn't. So it was very complex and very difficult, and the communications were just appalling. I was in New Delhi for the funeral immediately after the assassination of Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. That was just mayhem. So it really focuses the mind. Mm. The early journalistic training focuses the mind on sticking with the essential points, summarising issues very, very quickly, concisely and accurately.
Yeah, yeah. It seems at a lot of the times you would have been at the forefront of these experiences and you would have been very worried about your safety.
Yes, yeah, that's very true. I think you run on adrenaline. I know in Manila, the Marcos government was gradually rotting away. The Marcos regime was falling. I wasn't there for the final downfall of Marcos, but in the couple of years leading up to it, there were increasing riots in the street, people were being shot all around you, and journalists being deliberately stoned by soldiers and police, and that sort of thing was going on. So, yeah, it was quite frightening.
You had a non-fiction book published in the mid-1980s, and in the late 90s, you were managing in Queensland at the time to focus on writing non-fiction full-time.
Yeah.
Why did you make this decision?
I'd been in the ABC for over 30 years. Mm. I'd been ABC management roles, different roles, for about 15 years. When I left the ABC, I was manager of radio and television for Queensland, as I said, and I think I'd done it, you know.
Yeah.
Being manager for radio and television, and at times I think there was a staff of about 400, subsequently reduced considerably, but it's starting to get a long way from my original love of writing and broadcasting. You know, you're managing people, and as it's often said, you're managing other people's problems the whole time.
Yeah.
While trying to push the organisation forward. The ABC was going through a series of redundancies. The managing director of the ABC at the time, Brian Johns, was leaving. He was a good friend, and I just decided I want to get out as well. So I was able to get out quite early. I was 53, and then launched immediately into writing,
yes,
which is what I wanted to do. Wrote the world's greatest fictional book, which never got published. And then realised that, hang on, you know, that's not my training. My training is journalism, my training is non-fiction, and began writing books, and I'm on my fifth and sixth at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. The whole issue with the journalist is, unless you're working on maybe a current affairs programme like Four Corners or something, most journalists just don't have the time to spend in a lot of research that you frequently, particularly journalists working on a daily basis, are thrown into a story. You don't have that time for research. Well, it's just wonderful now, as someone who can... I've just returned from a tour on a fellowship to Japan and Europe, where I've been able to research all the major institutions there and universities, and just loving it.
That's one thing that struck me as being very different. In journalism, you don't have the time or the opportunity to concentrate a large amount of time on the one story. You've got to get it out and then move on to the next.
Certainly the journalism has been an enormous help, because journalists in radio and television, for instance, where I spent most of my time, are trained to be clear and concise in their writing and presentation. They're trained to very quickly go to the heart of an issue and reflect and report sometimes complex situations into accurate yet readily understood on-air reports. This comes with experience, of course, but it remains with you all your life, and you can apply it to any manner of management experiences.
Mm.
The mind automatically is cutting to the chase. If you've got a good experience as a journalist, you're letting the waffle and the crap go past you, and you're listening for the parts that really matter.
Now, you've received a lot of praise for what you've uncovered in regards to the Japanese threat during World War II, and in particular the wartime practices of Australian Prime Minister John Curtin. Now, in some ways, that sounds like the ultimate story that a journalist would love to pursue, but how has it been uncovering that as a non-fiction writer as opposed to when you would have been a journalist?
A journalist would never have the time to go into the detail and the depth that I've been able to do.
Mm.
Even someone working on a prestigious current affairs program or for a prestigious newspaper writing a lengthy article, you would never be given some couple of years or more to go into the depth and detail. and to gather the material that you need to base your assessments on. I'm actually doing a follow-up to that book and have discovered what I think is some really important issues. As I'm talking to you, I'm sitting in a study totally lined by reference book, mostly and files of material I've gathered over the last few years for this current book. Now, you just wouldn't be able to do that as a journalist. So I think writing non-fiction is certainly very much, for me, an extension of journalism, but it's something else again, really.
So in that case, can you tell me about something that you found while researching your non-fiction book that you don't think you would have found as a journalist?
Okay. Basically, I had heard that John Curtin had a friendly relationship with the first Japanese ambassador to Australia, a fellow called Tetsuo Kawai, who came to Australia in 1941 and went back to Japan in 1942. And Curtin was desperate to try and keep Australia out of the war. And as leader of the opposition, he met with Kawai on a number of occasions and invited Kawai to his home in Perth. Subsequently, Kawai, he spoke very, very highly of the integrity of John Curtin. As I was researching this, the first thing I did was go to the house of Tetsuo Kawai in a beautiful place called Manazuru in the Kanagawa prefecture south of Tokyo. This house was still owned by the family. Kawai had died in 1960s. I went there at night and I thought at first it was a library of books, but they turned out to be photograph albums. There were about 40 of them, and they included all sorts of photos of John Curtin and his wife. And on top of this, nearby was a gentleman, Toshiro Takeuchi, who later became a very good friend of mine, and he was a close friend of Kawai's. Kawai would always tell him about John Curtin, what a wonderful man he was and how very special he was. And that family relationship continued right through to the son, who became general manager of a big mining company in Australia. But basically, the most, I think, intriguing thing was I was given this big pile of papers. They were the writings of Tetsuo Kawai, they're in Japanese. I had them professionally translated, and he was, Tetsuo Kawai, telling this very personal, private story about this wonderful man, John Curtin. Tetsuo Kawai, incidentally, in his younger years, was a very much a right-wing radical, a bit of a fascist, and yet he formed this relationship with John Curtin, which changed his life. It set him on a different political course, actually. So it was all a fascinating experience.
What is the greatest piece of advice that you could give aspiring journalists that you learnt from your time as a journalist?
Oh, gee, that's a good question. You know, I think it would be don't be intimidated.
Mm.
In time, all journalists meet the rich and the powerful, and the thing is, don't be intimidated by people, because a good journalist needs to be able to assess what people are telling you. And if you're intimidated by them or fawning towards them, for instance, you know, this has got nothing to do with politeness. Of course you're polite towards people, but always have that inquiring mind, even when dealing with powerful people.
Yes.
It is so easy for a young journalist to be intimidated by someone. I remember Bob Hawke once was very condescending towards me. and this was in an industrial court before he entered politics. We're coming out of the court and I asked him something about the particular case. There was a big petrol strike going on at the time in Sydney, and he'd flown up from Melbourne, and I asked him some question that he didn't like, and he ripped my head off. And, you know, I just shrugged and thought, oh, well, bugger, it doesn't matter. And as we were walking down the corridor, this arm came around my shoulder, and he said, "So what are you doing these days?" Something to that effect, and it was Hawke. And he was sort of half apologising for being such a shit. And I thought, oh, well, yeah. But yeah, it is awfully easy for young journalists to be intimidated. The worst thing you can do, and this often happens, young journalists can be sent out at a second's notice to cover a story. And frequently, the best the chief of staff can do is put in your hand might be a single column newspaper cutting. Unfortunately, you've got to go out and see what they've got to say about that. Yeah. Now, you don't know whether that newspaper cutting that's been put in your hand is correct or not. I guess that's another point. A young journalist really should constantly brief themselves about what's in the news and should be fairly well read about what's going on. And that means following events on credible news and current affairs programs and reading credible newspapers to keep very much up to date with what's going on, because you can have egg all over your face if you barge into something and you really don't know what it's all about, which I've done on many occasions as a young journalist.
Some words of wisdom there from Bob Wirth, author of non-fiction books such as Saving Australia, about Prime Minister John Curtin, and Capturing Asia, the story of ABC cameraman Willie Fowle. You can find out more at his website, www.bobworth.com. Next week on Life After Journalism, our guest will be Bruce Montgomery, a former journalist for The Australian.